Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And you are welcome along to a Wednesday edition of the Huddle Breakdown. James here hosting with my good friend Alan Morrison from Celtic by Numbers. We are here to review the Livingston game. So if you're hoping to hear about Derby preview, you're going to have to wait until Friday when we're going to include Enda in the show. So just be warned, if that's what you're here for, with peace and love, I'm going to tell you that with peace and love, you'll have to wait till Friday. So tune out for, unless you want to listen to the Livingston review. Alan, how are you getting on?
That honesty always pays off, I find. But yeah, I mean, there's nothing. Yeah, I mean, listen, that's fine. We'll make it a short one, I suspect, because, you know, Livingston, I mean, for, but yeah. And not, you know,
yeah.
And we need to have Enda here to explain exactly how Liam Scales is going to conquer Ibrox.
That's correct. That is correct. So I believe you've done your work on the game. So I'll start with you and what your overall impressions were, and any kind of high level conclusions that you drew from the game.
Yeah. So I mean, it'd be easy to say a game of two halves, but there was a couple of well-worn cliches that I couldn't get out of my head, and the reason that they're cliches is because I used a lot. And the first half conformed to the one where you talk about your final ball or lack of in Celtic's case, just really bad execution, I think, more than anything else in the final third. And then obviously, you know, a bit of fortune with an own goal opens the game up for Celtic, and then it becomes relatively comfortable after that in the second half. So that's really the, you know, goals change games is the other well-worn cliche that really does apply to this matchup. So that's kind of like the, I think, you know, the high levels, I think, very particularly original in that, but I think that's how the game kind of went. But obviously, I think within that, there were a number of interesting topics that we can hit on. In terms of, you know, Livingston, I think we like to talk about the opposition approach as well, so we can get into that a little bit. Obviously, Rio Hatate was back, so that was a noteworthy performance in the game. We see Kuhn with a run of games, we see Iwata with a run of games. We saw Scales being preferred to Welsh, who I thought that did very well against St Johnstone. We saw, you know, what I think looked like a pretty sturdy Carter Vickers. You know, even on the plastic pitch, he looked to be moving a little bit more like his normal self, which is great. So I think there's a lot to get into. But yeah, if I had to summarize it and sort of tee you up for your summary, it would be, yeah, it would be the final ball first half, goals change game second half. This is what you pay for, folks.
That's right. That's you get what you pay for.
You get what you pay for.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was funny watching the, you know, kind of the mood in my feed on Twitter at halftime was pretty dire. I got that. Like, I, you know, to your point, the tale of two halves, it was pretty poor in the first half, but you get, you know, again, it was just, it was a classic Tony Macaroni half, I think. meaning that, you know, they were, you know, really not, other than their striker creating some good old fashioned physical challenges. You know, which again, we've seen that in the past. It's not unique. You know, even good old Julian got labeled with that dreadfully back in the 1920 season. So this is not some kind of outlier thing. And but it was all very well controlled. But you know, and on that pitch, it was, you know, dry, and it's even worse version of itself, I think, probably. So there's those extenuating circumstances. But it was not good. I mean, it was basically kind of a toss-up kind of game. Well, in I'd say like the 50th minute coming out in the second half. Yeah. So I to your point, you know, that goal was at a great time, and I don't have a strong sense. I was actually fighting fever off on the day of the game. So second half got a little misty in my memory.
is that a polite way of saying too many drugs?
Yes, yes. And
it's okay, James. So, by the way, James, it's okay. You can mix it with American beer because it's so weak.
Oh, come on. You need to get some more micro brews.
Oh, I know. I know.
But no, so my recollection, as hazy as it may be, is that they did seem to loosen up a little bit after we scored. But yeah, because of the very specific circumstances of the game, I don't really take much as far as extrapolating out of it, other than what, you know, kind of the trends of what we've already been talking about, which is, I think Kuhn is a useful player. He's got very good attributes. And again, the big thing for me was the glaring difference in, you know, with there's, you know, as we always talk about, there's a good and bad to this, but the glaring difference of what Hatate does bring in being able to, you know, pick out passes that are more threatening, and particularly from deep, and his ability to carry the ball and make progress there. I mean, it was just, you know, glaringly different on that left side as far as what that brought. Again, I don't think it was all that fundamental in shifting the game necessarily, but it does stand out in what I think we've been lacking for a large part of the season, in that kind of left-sided midfield role.
Yeah, I mean, I think the differential between in both sides, really, and I'm just looking at the sort of the pass network maps on StatsBomb as I'm talking here. There was such a concentration of Livingston activity down Celtic's left side, which, and we've talked about this endlessly, and you know, we've kind of also warned that, and we'll get to the good bits, and I think you've teed up some of those in terms of there were many, many positives for seeing Hatate on the pitch. But one of those isn't our ability to either, you know, defend transition on the left hand side, or neither does it reduce the risk of giving away a, oh my god, he just passed it straight to him type passes, which Taylor Scales and Hatate are all capable of on that side. And there is that toxic combination potential of that. And Livingston went huge in terms of trying to exploit Celtic's left hand side. All their shots came from the left off. I say all five shots came from Celtic's left hand side. If you look at the pass network, you've got little Stephen Bradley out on a little island on his own on the left, and everybody else from Livingston in a midfield and attacking sense congregated around their right hand side, Celtic's left hand side, and that actually afforded Hatate quite a bit of space to operate in, and also especially with Johnson and Kuhn in particular as well. So yeah, Livingston's approach was odd. They neither played particularly deep nor particularly compact. I think they were relatively very easy to play through, actually. The problem I thought Celtic had in the first half was, again, another example of where I think there's a lot of misdiagnosis about Celtic when they play poorly. The immediate response is, we're moving the ball too slowly. It's the horseshoe.
Side to side.
Stop that. Okay. The reason Celtic were so poor in the first half was because we kept going long and we kept going early. We kept failing to execute. And then the ball would go out of play for either a throw-in or a goal kick time and time again. And it would be like 5 minutes later, we'd be waiting for the ball to come in. And it just played into the hands in that respect. Now, in some ways, it's a good thing to do, right? When you've got a team like Livingston who are neither particularly deep, nor they're not going man to man, they're not particularly compact. They've got like two great big lumps at fullback who are not quick at all. It does make sense to try and hit Maeda, Kuhn, Kyogo on the transition, hit them early, hit the ball into the channel. That's fine. But pick your moments and execute it well. And we didn't do either of those things. So I think it was even more so than the sort of easy trope of saying our final ball in the final third was poor. We just simply didn't get the ball into the final third enough to cause enough problems, because we kept kicking the ball out of play, because we're trying either Hollywood passes or we're trying, you know, to go early and to go long. And I've said all season, you know, this is the anti Rodgers. This is not slow and horseshoe. This is something very different. This is Rodgers trying to go very direct. I just don't think we're very good at it. I understand why we do it. I just wish we'd get better at it. So I think we overdid that in the first half. I don't think we're particularly any better in the second. It's just that the goal completely changes the game. And what was obvious to see, and again, you'll hate this because you hate the whole body language thing, but my goodness, do they look a beaten team. I think they look a really sad outfit. And Martindale looks defeated to me. You know, he's just full of... I don't think he's run out of things to say, frankly. Listen, you can't criticise the guy. He is on the lowest budget in the league. They have overachieved for many years. So I'm not criticising them at all in terms of the club, but they just look like a very, very sad outfit. Once the first went in, I think the heads did literally drop, the body language, all of it. And that obviously helped Celtic to some extent as well. But listen, let's go on to Hitati, because great to see him back. What did you make of his 62 minutes, whatever it was?
Yeah, and I'll just one quick comment on what you just said, and then I'll get to Hitati is, relative to those long balls. I mean, if you just think kind of contextually playing on, you know, given the relative small dimensions of that pitch, and then, you know, given how kind of crap the state of the pitch was, that makes something that we've been struggling with already even more difficult. You know, the ability to play those kind of longer direct passes into the channels or over the top, and, you know, to hit them with the proper pace and control and the timing of the run on that, you know, parking lot that was playing that way. Yeah, that's tough. It's tough. So I think that, you know, fed into how difficult the challenge already was. I thought, you know, it's kind of, this goes back to, our wonderful discussions on Hitati from, I guess it was last season. Never that he doesn't bring certain attributes or isn't quite good in certain ways. And we always have Enda to thank for the selective editing on that infamous clip. But the context of that analysis was always about Hitati playing as an attacking eight for Ange in Ange ball in Champions League. Right. Yeah, particularly. Yeah. Relative to playing against Livingston at home in domestic football, it's a different kettle of fish. And I, you know, where his defensive work, pressing, the relative costs of when he got tackled and lost possession, for example, or, you know, had a misplaced pass, all of that, those issues skew totally differently when we're in this kind of game, where his upside of what he brings is, you know, hugely beneficial, potentially. And the downsides of what are, you know, can be problematic with how he plays are almost negated because of the limitations of the opposition. I thought, actually, given the context of his return, I thought he was really good. I thought, you're never going to have a, you know, an Iwata-esque perfect passing game from Hitati, because that's just not the nature of his range of passing and risk tolerance. But I think generally speaking, you know, the vision was evident. I thought his work rate was pretty good. And, It's where you saw some of the gaps is the physicality. It's some of the stuff that's inherent. Like he's not gonna turn into a 6 foot guy that weighs 200 pounds and chiseled out of stone. I mean, it's not gonna happen. So there are times when he's gonna be out muscled and tackled, that kind of thing. But yeah, generally speaking, I thought it was a refreshing return to having an attacking threat out of that part of the pitch. And that's, that's one of the issues. He had a nice goal, but that's not been Bernardo's issue. And to be honest, it's not really McGregor's strength, even when he's filled in there ably on the left side. So yeah, it was refreshing. Yeah. Is how I would characterize it.
No, I would agree. I would agree. I found myself, there was a couple of occasions in the first half, and some, either it was Alistair Johnson or somebody, Iwata, played this ball, because I was watching it on TV, I couldn't see the whole pitch, played this ball in towards the center of the pitch. I'm thinking, what are you doing? Where's that going? And it was to Hatate, and Hatate was sat in glorious isolation in a little pocket of space between the lines, and unlike Bernardo, turn and play forward immediately. And I just thought, yay, he had a little kind of, I really like this a lot. Let's have more of this, please. And I think, he started the game really strong. He was obviously flagging physically by the 62nd minute. I think he made a run up the right wing just after halftime, and that pretty much finished him off.
Yeah, I think he was gassed. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
But in terms of, oh, wow, yeah, this is great. Because, again, context. In the context of last season with that squad, with, a really smart player like Aaron Moy, even David Turnbull, who had his moments sort of thing, you'd look at Hatate and go, yeah, he gives you that. These are the risks. And it's always a kind of bit of a discussion who would be best kind of thing. But I think, our talent pool has been diluted such there is no doubt now that you put Hatate in that team. And it's going to be a net positive, especially as you say, in domestic football. Absolutely no doubt about that. And that finding of pockets of space and that willingness to pass the ball forward accurately, in the most part, to be fair, quickly, was really refreshing. He did actually have the highest pass packing score, 103, even though he only played 62 minutes. The next highest was Carter Vickers on 93. And then Taylor on 91, so 14 pack passes on that. So he achieved that and only played 60 odd minutes, and he played the 60 odd minutes where there was still a bit of jeopardy in the game. I mean, it was only 1-0 when he actually went off. So I think that's great. I think he should be really pleased with that, and therefore would expect him to. There's no reason now that he would sort of go back to the bench. I mean, and also to be fair to Hatate, he did have a couple of horrendous giveaways and turnovers, but then when Bernardo came on, Bernardo did as well. Bernardo had a terrible one where he passed the ball back to Yenge and left Scales and Vickers, Carter Vickers, like almost 3-on-2 sort of thing. It was horrendous, and he did another similar one as well, Bernardo. So let's be sort of balanced about that. So yeah, listen, I think Hatate should be really kind of positive about his performance. The fact that, he doesn't strike me as somebody who probably comes back and hits the ground running physically. He's, like you say, his speed and athleticism isn't his game. He seems to take a bit of time to get back up to the physicality of it all and the pace. I think he did really, really well. And it was just, as I say, he brought some nice, smiley moments to the game, which I really enjoyed.
Yeah, I'm 100% agreement. It's always nice when we violently agree on something. So I didn't prep you for this, but it struck me as, because I think we'll get into more of this, I think, on Friday, depending on, looking towards the Sunday's game and selection questions and the McGregor question, excuse me, which is, I think the narrative around Iwata has been quite positive. And I'm not saying I disagree with that necessarily. I'm just curious what your take is as far as how you think he's been playing and what kind of his relative utility is and has been in that six role.
Yeah, I mean, it is essentially, if you want to kind of focus on what are the benefits to the side, it is almost wholly defensive. You'll notice that he compensates for Taylor, Johnson, both like to get forward. If there is a transition and the ball pops up, he's like, oh, Iwata's there. He's like 10 yards in front of the centre-backs and he's just there and he's just covering the ground. And there was a lot of times when you just think, oh, he's there. and he got a foot in or the ball popped to him. And it's like, you know, that can be luck sometimes. Sometimes literally in a game of football, you can be a ball magnet and it's just the randomness of football. But he seems to be consistently kind of in the right place for that sixth role, which is a real asset. I mean, because it is, I don't know, it's 60% about positioning that role, especially in transition and defensive transition. So that aspect of his game is great. You know, my aggregated defensive metric is the defensive action success rate, which looks at all of your defensive action and assesses, you know, were they positive outcomes, negative outcomes? Did you win your challenges? Did you lose your challenges? Did you win possession? Did you lose possession? It looks at all of that. I mean, his defensive action success rate was actually Johnson had a clean at 100%, right? He was 9-0 for his challenges. Iwata was 6-2, which is 75%. He was actually second because Carter Vickers and Scales both had a bit of difficulty with Yenge on aerial balls. Basically, I mean, they couldn't get anyone near Yenge to support him, so it kind of came to nothing. But still, so yeah, defensively, positioning, his reading of situations. He does occasionally give the ball away, in rather surprisingly, not very often, but sometimes. And then the other side of it is, I mean, there was a couple of occasions where there was one in the first half where Kyogo dropped deep, received the ball on the turn, and fed it through the line to the edge of the box, and it was Iwata that was there, and I was like, how the hell did that happen? And but then rather than he could have either had a shot or he could have tried to feed somebody in, and he kind of hesitated, and the game just kind of swallowed him up a little bit, and nothing really came of that moment. But he does pop up sometimes in the box. He had one key pass, but his pack passing score was 54, which, you know, would be a lot lower than McGregor's would be. I mean, as I say, Hatate's was double that. Coons was about the same, and he's a winger. O'Reilly's was 49. O'Reilly had a quiet game. He only created 6 chances. Only had 4 shots. That's a quiet game, right, for O'Reilly. But he was kind of quiet on the ball, O'Reilly. But then, when Hatate plays, O'Reilly can become that more advanced 10, really. And and I think that helps Celtic, because the other side impact of Hatate playing is that it means that O'Reilly becomes a more advanced midfielder, and he connects really well with Kyogo. And he breaks into the box really well. And guess what? He scored a goal and got an assist on the game. So he wasn't as involved in build-up as the stats show. But nevertheless, a goal, an assist, 6 chances created, 4 shots at goal. I mean, those are big numbers for a striker, never mind a sort of advanced mid number 8. So I think there was a payoff in Hatate playing, and in that allowed O'Reilly to play it to be that 10 type player, not as opposed to an 8. And obviously, because you've also got Iwata, and Iwata is very much that holding player. So I think he's clearly going to be limited in terms of, you know, he's not going to give you the volume of pack passing. He's not going to give you the intensity of the tempo changes that McGregor brings, knowing when to speed up, when to slow down. That's McGregor's great strength, is his intelligence around when to run with the ball, when to come back, when to pass quickly, when to pass slowly. McGregor's got that intuitively. Iwata's not really that kind of intuitive tempo setter, if you like, and he doesn't post big numbers on his forward passing. But I suspect, and I've not looked at it, but I suspect his defensive numbers are way, are probably maybe even better than Scott Brown's, actually, to be honest with you, in terms of his defensive numbers. And that's going to be an interesting decision to make for Sunday, because do you actually want, and I know we're not going to talk about that game till later in the week, but, you know, a question to leave hanging for a review on Friday is, you know, there's a lot of utility there for that game on Friday with a player of Iwata's profile.
Yeah, that's partly why I asked it, because I think smartly, you know, you can look at this one of two ways. Heading into this game, I think it behooves Celtic to be coy about McGregor's availability, because if I'm Clement, if I'm optimizing my game plan to face Celtic, that is a fulcrum as far as what path I go. Meaning that if I'm facing a Callum McGregor-led Celtic, I probably do something completely different than if it's Awata in that role. And because to your point, everything that you were talent, it's just, you just laid out, you know, to me that screams high press, right? Which is, you know, you don't necessarily need to man mark Awata, and you know, some of those limitations on build up mean that, given some of our other issues in the back five, I'd say, hey, you know, maybe the risk reward of doing some aggressive high pressing and moving their defensive line up. Whereas if McGregor's in there, you know, you probably either don't high press, or if you're going to do it, you got to man mark him. So if you come into a game assuming McGregor and why would you man mark Awada? You know what I mean? Like there's to go through a whole week of preparation, you know, so I'm happy to see that we're being coy, because I think it makes the job of preparation for the opposition for the weekend a lot more difficult, and quite frankly, more room for error and mistake and judgment as they decide to pursue whatever they do in the final, what is it, hour and 15 minutes prior to the game when the lineup comes out. any other standouts as far as, I agree with you, Carter Vickers looked excellent. You know, Kuhn to me, again, kind of, you know, he's not, you know, he's not a world beater, but he's definitely showing more and more about what his positive attributes are. Any other ones stand out?
No, I mean, on Kuhn then. So, I mean, he led the team in sort of packing score, 180. That's across all activities. That's receiving, passing, turnovers and so forth. So, and again, what did he play? 70, 75 minutes, or did he play 60? I can't remember exactly. So again, very, he got on the, he's similar to, Palmer and Jota in the sense that he's pretty good at getting on the ball. I mean, that sounds like a really damning with faint praise, but, you know, if you think about some wingers that just don't seem to find space, don't seem to get themselves free, you know, he does seem to find ways to get on the ball and influence the game.
Given the wing play this season, we'll take faint praise.
Listen, it's hugely encouraging because, you know, as they always say, right, you cannot coach and you cannot account for just sheer raw pace, right? And he has got that. I mean, he is rapid, and you can see he's starting to get his rhythm even on that difficult surface. I mean, yeah, sometimes he kind of ran up a blind alley and it petered out for sure, classic winger sort of stuff. But in a game like Sunday, again, I'm jumping forward, but there is a lot of merit, and we saw this when the Rangers had their Europa League run. I keep coming back to is just having someone that takes the ball 60 yards up the pitch, and if you do it quickly, you know, that's a huge defensive benefit. Never mind attacking, that's a huge defensive benefit. It allows everyone to push up. It allows everyone to reset, allows everyone to get into shape. And then you sort of think about the attacking benefits of that in terms of, you know, your the transition effect on the other team at running at that pace. Now, again, are we going to come up against as fullbacks as slow as, you know, Nottingham and Sean Kelly, who are both, neither of them are fullbacks anyway by trade. I think both of them are either centre-backs. I think Kelly's a defensive midfielder really by his history. Nottingham's a centre-back, I think. So, no, listen, definitely an element. You know, Maeda was running past his man before he launched the ball out the stadium with his left foot. But no, listen, I think Kuhn's going to be a little bit of our secret weapon. You know, a lot of people jump to conclusions about him based on his early performances. I think we all know the backstory to that now. I like the way he was speaking. He more or less saying, I've been at Ajax, I've been at Bayern Munich. You think I give a shit? You know, it's like, I can do this stuff, man. Don't worry about it. I got it. You know, again, that kind of got that vibe from it, which I thought, yeah, I like that. That's really cool. He's not going to be phased, I don't think. And he is going to have lots of space to operate in. Again, I know I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but and I think it's probably a player that we've got that the opposition maybe don't really know a lot about. So yeah, I think it's super optimistic about that. It was good to see Yang come on and get involved. You know, he didn't really do anything in terms of the glamorous attacking stats, other than, again, he got on the ball a lot. He took the ball forward. He tried to be positive about it. And again, what I'm trying to say is he just seems a little bit more settled. And as a young player, you know, we are all, me included, a bit impatient with these guys. So in terms of our wing play situation, I'm not saying it's perfect, but it certainly is better. And I think, you know, if you've got a front three now with Maeda, Kyogo and Kun, the sheer pace of that front three is going to give any defence problems, and actually more likely to give a defence problems that is attacking you. And I think that all augurs well for the Derby matchups.
Yeah, question about Awada versus McGregor, outside of that, I mean, that to me is what is comforting, to use an analytical phrase, is that we are finally having some degree of being settled. Mm. I mean, barring some renewed injury issue, you know, I think that the starting 11 outside of that one question is pretty much settled. And that, you know, given just how chaotic the season has been in the chopping and changing, most of it by necessity, by the way, but a lot of it also because of the necessity of injury, then just the, you know, issues with performance quality from some of the individual players. It's just been, you know, it's been so long since we've seen that kind of not only coherence, and I don't mean that in a game plan perspective, but an alignment of players with skills, with effort, with style of play, with selection. You know, we're kind of coming together at the right time here. So I think that's...
Yeah, I mean, if you think about the season, we've never had, and I know this is unanalytical in some respects, but I'm a great believer in the force of momentum. And I would love to put some sort of, you know, listen, these things aren't secrets. It's lots of, that momentum is probably a bracket of attributes, things like, you know, confidence and all that sort of thing come into it, form, etc. But we've never had a bit of the season where we've kind of just been on a bit of a roll and a bit of a sort of, oh, nice, another comfortable win this week. That's a few in a row now. We're all feeling, I don't think we've ever been in that state. We've been in a state of tension all season. You know, a poor performance or a ricket has just been round every corner pretty much. So it would be nice if that run of five or six games where we're just, the team is just, you know, to use the non-analytical phrase, clicking. And it really isn't a secret. It comes down to not changing the lineup. It comes down to playing players in form in the right position. It comes down to having your best players on the pitch. It's as simple as that, right? It now would be a good time to hit that. And I'm not saying that the Livingston game was, because again, I come back to, if you want to even go back a level, when have we had a 90-minute performance? I mean, I'm not sure there is such a thing as a 90-minute performance. It's probably, again, it's an emotional term, that, but that you know, at least playing very, you know, under Ange.
We take 60.
Yeah, under Ange, where you might be 4-0 up by the 70th minute, and then who cares what happens in the last 20, right? No one's counting anymore, type of thing. We've not had too many of those. And it doesn't matter what the score is. I'm just talking about the performance of the first 45 minutes were a joy, then the next 50 minutes were a joy after halftime. We were 2-0 up, and then it's fine. We've not had too many of those, and I think I'm not sure I care, but it'd be nice to think we could just put together a run of performances where we're a bit more coherent. And I think we've got the better players ready now, so this is as good a time as it's going to be, I think, all season.
Well, with that, I think it's a good place to call it a day as we run over the half hour mark here. And I think it's also a good segue to tee up the preview show. Hopefully we're going to record on Friday because, you know, Sunday's game is going to be kind of seminal in based off what you were just describing. It could be an accelerant in that momentum, meaning that could crystallize a lot of things, or, you know, if it doesn't go the way we're hoping, then it, you know, could call into question some other lingering issues and questions that we have on the season and this group of players. So, yeah, thanks for joining us. Appreciate the follows and the subscribers on YouTube, the messages. We try to get in there and not only moderate, but interact a little bit. So feel free to leave comments. Subscribe on, or I should say, yeah, subscribe on iTunes, leave a review there, or Spotify. We appreciate it. Alan, thanks a lot, and we will talk again on Friday.